You're listening to The Word from Westwood, a series of podcasts featuring sermons preached at Westwood United Methodist Church in Los Angeles, California.
Well, it was a hot summer day, and it was in the second week of July, as we were driving our car along the Via Bonanno Pisano, trying to figure out where we were going to park the car. Now, unlike most American tourist destinations, the Italians, and I can say that because I'm half Italian, consider signs to be optional. And there was no major parking lot. You just had to park your car wherever you could find a space. Not unlike Westwood Boulevard here. Well, we finally found a spot, and we walked to enter the walls of the compound. And when we proceeded through the gate, there it was, standing there right in front of us, something that was really a little bit surreal, the Leaning Tower of Pisa. And by gosh, it really was leaning. I don't remember how many pictures I had seen of the tower since I was a child, but I'll admit it was really kind of exciting that day to see this oddity in person, the fact that this really existed. Now, the tower is a campanile, which means that it's the bell tower of the Cathedral of Pisa. And while everybody goes there to see the tower, there's an equally as magnificent baptistry in the cathedral itself. Now, we know the tower is tilting, it's leaning, and it comes because it had an improperly created foundation when they started to build this building. In fact, historians say that it started to lean from day one, almost as soon as it was built, and rather than correct it, they just kept going, and it took almost 200 years to complete the building. So if you've ever complained about how long a remodeling takes, you know, think again. Now, one of the interesting bits is that partway through the construction of this, they knew they had a problem. So the engineers and the architects and those doing the construction decided they were going to slant the tower so it was once again vertical. And they did that. But the tower continued to lean. So now you just kind of have this bowed tower that's there. And fortunately for us, it has been stabilized, and they figure it won't come crashing down for at least another 200 years. I don't think we're going to be around to see that. Well, the image of this leaning tower, I believe, is a wonderful metaphor of the things that are going on in our lives and the kinds of things that go on in our world. There are many institutions, economic systems, families, relationships, you can name it, that are always on the verge of a tipping point, just like the tower. And should it get to that place and it keeps going, the outcome is unpreventable. The whole story around creating and sustaining that tower is also, I believe, a symbol for much of what is our experience. Sometimes we know in our lives we have to make course corrections. Sometimes we actually have to make a major effort in order to keep things on track so that they don't totally collapse. Even if we succeed, we are still reminded in our quest that the quest for the perfect is often a folly, and sometimes it's not completely correctable, just like that tower will never be straight. And sometimes we may ask ourselves the question, should we just let it fall down? Well, the experience of ancient Israel and Judah was such that this metaphor of the leaning tower, I think it would be perfectly understood for them. This morning we heard a reading from the prophet Amos, and this prophet, we might remember, was from the time when the divided kingdom was the reality. The kingdom of Israel was the northern kingdom, the kingdom of Judah was the southern kingdom. Amos, as we know, was the prophet associated with the northern kingdom, roughly in the 8th century BCE. And this was the time when Jeroboam II happened to be the ruler of Israel. Now, we might remember that when we talk about the ancient kings of Judah and Israel, they're pretty much either cast as good or bad. There's no in-between with these kings, it seems. And you have to think about it this way. Remember that even David, with all of his issues, adultery, murder, unfaithfulness, just to name a few, David was considered to be a good king the prototype of what a king should be. Imagine what it must have meant if you were considered to be a bad king. Well, Jeroboam II was a bad king. And bad kings generally meant that there was a real question about the faithfulness of the nation, of the people, and whether or not they were following God's hope for the people. There was no way to mince words about this passage. Amos spoke words of doom and gloom to ancient Israel. According to Amos, God had tired of the unfaithfulness of Israel. This mini drama begins, as we heard, with God appearing to Amos in a vision. And there were two separate little acts in this drama about the plagues. One that was a plague of locusts, the other that was a plague of fire. And in both cases, Amos pleaded with God, how can Jacob survive this? Jacob meaning the kingdom of Israel. How can they survive these plagues? And in both cases, we were told that God relented. God did not send the plagues upon them. God instead chose to look away from their unfaithfulness. But the third episode of this vision, it was quite different. God in this vision brought Amos to a wall, and he held this plumb line against the wall. Now, a plumb line is a very, very simple tool. It was created by ancient construction workers, and we still use plumb lines even to this day. There's a weight, or what we call a plumb bob, on one end, and you attach it to a string. And the wonderful predictability of the force of gravity allows there to be a straight line created by this to be used as a reference for saying if the wall or anything we're building is truly vertical or not. Now, it doesn't take much of a stretch of the imagination to understand why you would want a wall to be vertical. It can be very simple in its construction, being a vertical wall, but it provides a kind of stability and a sturdiness that is going to ultimately provide for long-term success. If something like a wall is out of plumb, it usually means that there are going to be great problems down the road. Now, Israel was considered to be the wall to which God was holding up this plumb line. And in this particular case, we assume that Israel failed. It was out of plumb. And when a wall was not plumb, there was no choice but to tear it down and to rebuild. You see, this time God was not going to ignore the unfaithfulness of Israel. As the prophet stated, the high places of Isaac shall be made desolate, and the sanctuaries of Israel shall be laid to waste. And I will rise against the house of Jeroboam with the sword. There's no way around it. This was not a message of good news. Now, we also need to remember that during this time in our biblical history, depicting God as one who demonstrated quick judgment, well, that was pretty much the norm. In this case, it was a judgment for what we believe are all the right reasons. But also, from our vantage point, it depicts a God with whom we, particularly us in the modern day world, are not very well acquainted, seeming very much different than the mold of the God of love and forgiveness and redemption that is central to our New Testament story. So we need to remember we are looking at this story from a completely different vantage point. We also should remember that the northern kingdom, the kingdom of Israel, about which Amos spoke, was the first of the two kingdoms to crumble. And from the perspective of the various prophets, the northern kingdom had lost its way. There was no doubt about it. They had started to worship other gods. They were unfaithful in their dealings with one another. They did not practice the justice that was supposed to be emblematic of God's people. So from our vantage point, whether it was God who brought about their demise of the house of Jeroboam, or because it was the product of their own choices which brought about their demise, it really doesn't matter. The result was the same: devastation and destruction. Well, this prophetic vision of Amos has been deeply imprinted upon our collective religious psyche ever since. It has been a symbol that many have used to ask the question, how is the church being about what it is supposed to be, especially in its terms, in terms of its work for the poor, its work for peace, and its work for justice. Well, we know that ours is a checkered history. The humanness of the church has been quite apparent throughout its history. We know of the abuse of power, of genocide, of greed, of colonialism, of oppression of people. And that's just a part of the history, friends. Just a part. In other words, there are times where we have been that wall with a plumb line held up to it that is on the verge of collapse. Sometimes we have learned our lesson, but we seem to be quick to forget those lessons of the past. This, I believe, is where the symbol of that leaning tower comes in. There have been corrective things put into place, yes, sometimes even Herculean efforts in order to stabilize the foundation of that building in Pisa. But the end result is still a flawed tower that could be at the point of tipping at any time. The flaws within the tower, as is the case for the church, will always be with us. And there was a point, friends, when you think about it, where American churches of the non-Catholic variety would point to the Roman church in derision, pointing out all of its flaws. Unfortunately, this was a perfect example of pointing to the speck in someone else's eye and forgetting that there was a log in our own. The American expression of Christianity has had to deal with all of the same issues that have been endemic to church life always, all the way back to the time of Amos. At various times and places, we have been guilty of turning our head the other way to injustice, even to the point of genocide. We have a history of demeaning persons, rendering them as second-class citizens, which unfortunately in some places still happens even to this day. When branches of the church or congregations have challenged the power structure, the retribution has sometimes been swift and far-reaching. It almost would make someone wonder whether we should just let the wall fall down and start all over again. Of course, it doesn't take much of a stretch for us to realize that what we're experiencing as a community of faith is representative of our experience as a nation, our experience as a world community. We are living in shaky, if not transitional, times at best, when the rules seem to be changing at a pace we've never known. Things once considered normative are no longer. Terrorism seems to fill daily headlines. Political races are nothing but down and dirty, certainly not representative of aspirations which are consistent with creating a more just and a more peaceful world. A wall that is out of plumb certainly seems like a metaphor for the times in which we live. A cynicism has also developed, which doesn't see any way out of it. And while there is plenty of talk about change, you have to wonder if any of it is really substantive, and even more important, does the change lead to something better, or will it be something even worse? That is where we, as people who are followers of Jesus, are called to offer one another and our world a different vision. Jesus came into this world so that the oppressed might find freedom, that the poor might find care, that the disenfranchised would instead see welcome arms and warm hospitality. No, we probably cannot do much to deal with the problems on that meta, way above scale, but we can do much when it comes to the things that are within your and my grasp. As the beloved community, we can train our children in the way of New Testament hope, that God has a vision for us, that we do not always have to live out of human weakness, but instead we live out of our human hope. We have a leaning tower of Christianity, friends. There really is no doubt about that. What we do in these next decades of world transition will determine whether the tower falls or even with our inconsistencies, it manages to stay standing. If it does, it will come with our weaknesses and strengths and struggles in full view. And maybe, friend, that's a good thing, because then we're really being honest about who we are. Christ came so that our lives might be changed. So friends, are we committed? Are we committed to be agents of that change, which will actually make a difference in the lives of the people around us? Amen.
Westwood United Methodist Church is located at 10497 Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles, between Westwood Village and Beverly Hills. Sundays are at the heart of this faith community's life, and we invite you to worship every Sunday at 10 a.m. A wide variety of opportunities for all ages are also available every week. To learn more, visit us on the web at www.westwoodumc.org or call the church office at area code 310-474-4511. I'm Janet Hoskins. Westwood United Methodist Church. Do justice, love kindness, walk humbly with God.